Yasna cocked an eyebrow.
Or would you prefer our scholarship be sloppy?
The Azish seemed mollified by this.
I just think, ELA said, you showing up here with them is a slap in the face for the rest of us.
ELA, Yasna said, it is good you are here. Sometimes an intelligent, dissenting voice tests and proves a theory. I do wish you'd work harder on the intelligent part.
Dalinar downed the rest of his drink and smiled as ELA settled back in her chair, wisely not escalating a verbal battle against Yasna. Unfortunately, Ruthar did not have similar sense.
Don't mind her, ELA, he said, mustache wet with wine. The godless have no concept of proper decency. Everyone knows that the only reason to abandon belief in the Almighty is so that you can explore vice.
Oh, Ruthar, Dalinar thought, you can't win this fight. Yasna has thought about the topic far more than you have. It's a familiar battleground to her. Storms. That was it.
They aren't going to attack, Yakoved,
Dalinar shouted, interrupting Yasna's rebuttal. Those in the room turned to him, surprised, Yasna's mouth half open.
Dalinar? High Prince Aladar asked. We decided that Yakoved was the most likely...
No, Dalinar said. No! We know the terrain too well. The Alethi and the Vedans have spent generations fighting over that land.
What then?
Yasna asked. Dalinar ran back into the map room. The others fluttered in around him.
They went to Marat, right?
Dalinar asked.
They cut through Emul and into Marat, silencing Spanreeds nationwide. Why? Why go there?
Azir was too well fortified, Aladar said. From Marat, the Voidbringers can strike at Yakoved from both the west and the east.
Through the bottleneck in Triax?
Dalinar asked.
We talk of Yakoved's weakness, but that's relative. They still have a huge standing army, strong fortifications. If the enemy wades into Yakoved now, while solidifying their own power, it will drain their resources and stall their conquest. That isn't what they want right now, when they still have the upper hand in momentum.
Where, then? Nonurion asked.
A place that was hit hardest of all by the new storms, Dalinar said, pointing at the map. A place whose military might was severely undermined by the Everstorm. A place with an oath gate.
Queen Fen gasped, safe hand going to her lips.
Thalen City?
Navani asked.
Are you sure?
If the enemy takes Thalen City, Dalinar said, they can blockade Yakoved, Karbranth, and what few lands in Alethkar we still own. They can seize command of the entire southern depths and launch naval assaults on Tashik and Shinovar. They could swarm New Natnan and have a position from which to assault the Shattered Plains. Strategically, Thalen City is far more important than Yakoved, but at the same time, far worse defended.
But they'd need ships, Aladar said.
The Parshmen took our fleet, Fen said.
After that first terrible storm, Dalinar said, how were there any ships left for them to take?
Fen frowned.
As I think about it, that's remarkable, isn't it? There were dozens remaining, as if the winds left them alone, because the enemy needed them.
Storms. I've been thinking too much like an Alethi, Dalinar said. Boots on stone, but the enemy moved into Marat immediately, a perfect position from which to launch at Thalen City.
We need to revise our plans, Ben said.
Peace, your majesty, Aladar said. We have armies in Thalen City already. Good Alethi troops. Nobody is better on the ground than Alethi infantry.
We have three divisions there right now, Dalinar said. We'll want at least three more.
Sir, Fen's son said. Bright Lord, that's not enough.
Dalinar glanced at Fen. Her wizened admiral nodded.
Speak, Dalinar said.
Sir, the youth said, we're glad to have your troops on the island. Collects breath. If you're going to get into a fight, you definitely want the Alethi on your side. But an enemy fleet is a much larger problem than you're assuming. One you can't easily fix by moving troops around. If the enemy ships find Thalen City well defended, they'll just sail on and attack Karbranth or Dumedari, or any number of defenseless cities along the coast.
Dalinar grunted. He did think too much like an Aleti.
What then?
We need our own fleet, obviously, Fenn's admiral said. He had a thick accent of mushed syllables, like a mouthful of moss. But most of our ships were lost to the blustering Everstorm. Half were abroad, caught unaware. My colleagues now dance upon the bottom of the depths.
And the rest of your fleet was stolen, Dalinar said with a grunt. What else do we have?
His Majesty Taravangian has ships at our port, the Vaden High Prince said.
All eyes turned toward Taravangian.
Merchant ships only,
the old man said.
Vessels that carried my healers. We haven't a true navy, but I did bring 20 ships. I could perhaps provide 10 more from Carbranth.
The storm took a number of our ships, the Vaden High Prince said, but the civil war was more devastating. We lost hundreds of sailors. We have more ships than we have crew for right now.
Fenn joined Dalinar beside the map.
We might be able to scrape together a semblance of a navy to intercept the enemy, but the fighting will be on the decks of ships. We'll need troops.
You'll have them, Dalinar said.
Alethi, who've never seen a rough sea in their lives? Fenn asked, skeptical.
She looked to the Aesish generals.
Tashik has a navy, doesn't it? Staffed and supplemented by Aesish troops.
The generals conferred in their own language. Finally, one spoke through an interpreter.
The 13th Battalion, Red and Gold, has men who do a rotation on ships and patrol the Grand Waterway. Getting others here would take much time, but the 13th is already stationed in Yakaved.
We'll supplement them with some of my best men, Dalinar said. Storms, we need those windrunners active. Fenn, would your admirals present a suggested course for the gathering and deployment of a unified fleet?
Sure,
the short woman said. She leaned in, speaking under her breath.
I warn you, many of my sailors follow the passions. You're going to have to do something about these claims of heresy, Blackthorn. Already there's talk among my people that this is, at long last, the right time for the Thalans to break free from the Vorin Church.
I won't recant, Dalinar said.
Even if it causes a wholesale religious collapse in the middle of a war?
He didn't reply, and she let him withdraw from the table, thinking about other plans. He spoke with the others about various items, thanked Navani, again, for holding everything together. Then eventually he decided to go back down below and take a few reports from his stewards. On his way out he passed Taravangian, who had taken a seat by the wall. The old man looked distracted by something.
Taravangian, Dalinar said. We'll leave troops in Yakaved, too, in case I'm wrong. Don't worry.
The old man looked to Dalinar, then strangely wiped tears from his eyes.
Are you in pain?
Dalinar asked.
Yes, but it is nothing you can fix.
He hesitated.
You are a good man, Dalinar Cullen. I did not expect that.
Ashamed by that, Dalinar hurried from the room, followed by his guards. He felt tired, which seemed unfair, considering he'd just spent a week basically sleeping. Before seeking his stewards, Dalinar stopped on the fourth floor from the bottom. An extended walk from the lifts took him to the outer wall of the tower, where a small series of rooms smelled of incense. People lined the hallways, waiting for glyph wards or to speak with an ardent. More than he'd expected. But then they didn't have much else to do, did they?
Is that how you think of them already? A part of him asked. Only here to seek spiritual welfare because they don't have anything better to do?
Dalinar kept his chin high, resisting the urge to shrink before their stares. He passed several ardents and stepped into a room lit and warmed by braziers where he asked after Kadash. He was directed onto a garden balcony where a small group of ardents was trying to farm. Some placed seed paste, while others were trying to get some shale bark starters to take along the wall. An impressive project, and one he didn't remember ordering them to begin. Kadash was quietly chipping creme off a planter box. Dalinar settled down beside him. The scarred Ardent glanced at him and kept working.
"It's very late coming," Dalinar said, "but I want to apologize to you for Rathalas."
"I don't think I'm the one you need to apologize to," Kadash said. "Those who could bear an apology are now in the Tranquiline Halls."
"Still, I made you a part of something terrible."
"I chose to be in your army," Kadash said. "I've found peace with what we did. Found it among the Ardents, where I no longer shed the blood of men. I suppose it would be foolish of me to suggest the same to you." Dalinar took a deep breath.
"I'm releasing you and the other Ardents from my control. I won't put you in a position where you have to serve a heretic. I'll give you to Taravangian, who remains Orthodox."
"No.
I don't believe you have the option to..."
"Just listen for one storming moment, Dalinar," Kadash snapped. Then he sighed, forcibly calming himself. "You assume that because you're a heretic, we don't want anything to do with you."
"You proved that a few weeks ago when we dueled."
"We don't want to normalize what you've done, or what you're saying. That doesn't mean we will abandon our posts. Your people need us, Dalinar, even if you believe you don't."
Dalinar walked to the edge of the garden, where he rested his hands on the stone railing. Beyond him, clouds mustered at the base of the peaks like a phalanx protecting its commander. From up here, it looked like the entire world was nothing more than an ocean of white broken by sharp peaks. His breath puffed in front of him. Cold as the frost lands, though it didn't seem as bad inside the tower.
"Are any of those plants growing?" he asked softly.
"No," Kadash said from behind. "We aren't sure if it's the cold or the fact that few storms reach this high." He kept scraping. "What will it feel like when a storm goes high enough to engulf this entire tower?"
"Like we're surrounded by dark confusion," Dalinar said. "The only light coming in flashes we can't pinpoint or comprehend. Angry winds trying to tow us in a dozen different directions, or barring that, rip our limbs from our bodies."
He looked toward Kadash.
"Like always."
"The Almighty was a constant light."
"And?"
"And now you make us question.
You make me question.
Being an Ardent is the only thing that lets me sleep at night, Dalinar. You want to take that from me, too? If he's gone, there's only the storm."
"I think there must be something beyond. I asked you before, what did worship look like before Vornism? What did..."
"Dalinar, please, just stop."
Kadash drew in a deep breath.
"Release a statement. Don't let everyone keep whispering about how you went into hiding. Say something pedantic like, 'I'm pleased with the work the Vorin Church does and support my Ardents if I myself no longer have the faith I once did.' Give us permission to move on. Storms, this isn't the time for confusion. We don't even know what we're fighting."
Kadash didn't want to know that Dalinar had met the thing they were fighting. Best not to speak of that. But Kadash's question did leave him considering. Odium wouldn't be commanding the day-to-day operations of his army, would he? Who did that? The Fused? The Voidspren? Dalinar strolled a short distance from Kadash, then looked toward the sky.
"Stormfather," he asked, "do the enemy forces have a king or a high prince? Maybe a head Ardent? Someone other than Odium?"
The Stormfather rumbled.
"Again, I do not see as much as you think I do. I am the passing storm, the winds of the tempest. All of this is me. But I am not all of it, any more than you control each breath that leaves your mouth."
Dalinar sighed. It had been worth the thought.
"There is one I have been watching," the Stormfather added. "I can see her when I don't see others."
"A leader?" Dalinar asked.
"Maybe. Men, both human and singer, are strange in what or whom they revere. Why do you ask?"
Dalinar had decided not to bring anyone else into one of the visions because he worried about what Odium would do to them. But that wouldn't count for people already serving Odium, would it?
When is the next high storm?
Teravangian felt old. His age was more than the aches that no longer faded as the day proceeded. It was more than the weak muscles which still surprised him when he tried to lift an object that should have seemed light. It was more than finding that he'd slept through yet another meeting, despite his best efforts to pay attention. It was even more than slowly seeing almost everyone he'd grown up with fade away and die. It was the urgency of knowing that tasks he started today, he wouldn't finish. He stopped in the hallway back to his rooms, hand resting on the strata-lined wall. It was beautiful, mesmerizing. But he only found himself wishing for his gardens in Carbranth. Other men and women got to live out their waning hours in comfort, or at least familiarity. He let Maral take him by the arm and guide him to his rooms. Normally, Teravangian would have been bothered by the help. He did not like being treated like an invalid. Today, though? Well, today he would suffer the indignity. It was a lesser one than collapsing in the hallway. Inside the room, Adratagia sat amid 6 different scribbling span reeds, buying and trading information like a merchant at market. She looked at him, but knew him well enough not to comment on his exhausted face or slow steps. Today was a good day of average intelligence. Perhaps a little on the stupid side, but he'd take that. He seemed to be having fewer and fewer intelligent days, and the ones he did have frightened him. Teravangian settled down in a plush, comfortable seat, and Mabin went to get him some tea. "Well?" Adratagia asked. She'd grown old, too, with enormous bags around her green eyes, the persistent kind formed by drooping skin. She had liver spots and wispy hair. No man would look at her and see the mischievous child she'd once been, the trouble the two of them had gotten into.
"Varko?"
Adratagia asked.
"My apologies," he said. "Dalinar Kholin has recovered."
"A problem?"
"An enormous one."
Teravangian took the tea from Mabin.
"More than you can guess, I should say, even with the diagram before you. But please, give me time to consider. My mind is slow today. Have you reports?"
Adratagia flipped over a paper from one of her stacks.
"Murloc seems to have settled in the Horn-Eater Peaks. Yoshor is on his way there now. We might again soon have access to the Death Rattles."
"Very well."
"We've found what happened to Graves," Adratagia continued. "Scavengers found the storm-blown wreckage of his wagon, and there was an intact span reed inside."
"Graves is replaceable."
"And the shards?"
"Irrelevant,"
Teravangian said.
"We won't win the prize through force of arms. I was reluctant to let him try his little coup in the first place."
He and Graves had disagreed about the diagram's instructions to kill Dalinar or recruit him, and who was to be king of Alethkar. Well, Teravangian had been wrong about the diagram himself many times, so he'd allowed Graves to move forward with his own plots, according to his own readings of the diagram. While the man's schemes had failed, so had Teravangian's attempt to have Dalinar executed. So perhaps neither of them had read the diagram correctly. He took some time to recover, frustrated that he should need to recover from a simple walk. A few minutes later, the guard admitted Malata. The Radiant wore her usual skirt and leggings, Thalen style, with thick boots. She took a seat across from Teravangian at the low table, then sighed in a melodramatic way.
"This place is awful. Every last idiot here is frozen, ears to toes."
Had she been this confident before bonding a spren? Teravangian hadn't known her well then. Oh, he'd managed the project, full of eager recruits from the diagram, but the individuals hadn't mattered to him. Until now.
"Your spren," Advertagia asked, getting out a sheet of paper.
Has she anything to report?
No, Malata said. Only the tidbit from earlier about other visions Dalinar hasn't shared with everyone.
And?
Terabangian asked.
Has the Spren expressed any reservations about the work you've given her?
Damnation, Malata said, rolling her eyes. You're as bad as Colin's scribes, always poking.
We need to be cautious, Malata, Terabangian said. We can't be certain what your Spren will do as her self-awareness grows. She will surely dislike working against the other orders.
You're as frozen as the lot of them, Malata said. She started glowing, stormlight rising from her skin. She reached forward, whipping off her glove, safe hand, no less, and pressing it against the table. Marks spread out from the point of contact, little swirls of blackness etching themselves into the wood. The scent of burning filled the air, but the flames didn't persist if she didn't will them to. The swirls and lines extended across the tabletop, a masterwork of engraving accomplished in moments. Malata blew off the ash. The surge she used, division, caused objects to degrade, burn, or turn to dust. It also worked on people. Spark is fine with what we're doing, Malata said, pressing her finger down and adding another swirl to the table. I told you the rest of them are idiots. They assume all the Spren are going to be on their side. Never mind what the Radiance did to Spark's friends, never mind that organized devotion to honor is what killed hundreds of Ash Spren in the first place.
And Odium?
Terabangian asked, curious. The diagram warned that the personalities of the Radiance would introduce great uncertainty to their plans. Spark is game for whatever it takes to get vengeance, and what lets her break stuff. Malata grinned. Someone should have warned me how fun this would be. I'd have tried way harder to land the job.
What we do is not fun,
Terabangian said.
It is necessary, but it is horrible. In a better world, Graves would have been right. We would be allies to Dalinar Kholin.
You're too fond of the Blackthorn Vargo, Advertagia warned. It will cloud your mind.
No, but I do wish I hadn't gotten to know him. That will make this difficult.
Terabangian leaned forward, holding his warm drink. Boiled Ingo tea with mint. Smells of home. With a start, he realized he'd probably never live in that home again, would he? He'd thought perhaps he would return in a few years. He wouldn't be alive in a few years.
Adro,
he continued.
Dalinar's recovery convinces me we must take more drastic action. Are the secrets ready?
Almost, she said, moving some other papers.
My scholars in Yakaved have translated the passages we need, and we have the information from Malata's spying. But we need some way to disseminate the information without compromising ourselves.
Assign it to Dova,
Terabangian said.
Have her write a scathing, anonymous essay, then leak it to Tashik. Leak the translations from the Dawn Chant the same day. I want it all to strike at once.
He set aside the tea. Suddenly, a sense of Carbranth made him hurt.
It would have been so, so much better for Dalinar to have died by the assassin's blade. For now, we must leave him to the enemy's desires. And that will not be as kind as a quick death.
Will it be enough? Malata asked. That old axe hound is tough.
It will be enough. Dalinar would be the first to tell you that when your opponent is getting back up, you must act quickly to crush his knees. Then he will bow and present you his skull. Oh, Dalinar, you poor... poor man.
Shallan's Sketchbook. Shadesmar Spren. It seems that the Spren we see in our physical world are only partial manifestations of more complex beings that are part of an entire ecosystem of their own. I could spend another lifetime studying these Spren alone. Anticipation Spren. These are surprisingly stealthy and can sense your anticipation from a great distance. Fear Spren. We saw many of these. They are tenacious. Drawing is easy. Clearly it isn't.
108. Honor's Path. Chemoarish, the Dust Mother, has some of the most varied lore surrounding her. The wealth of it makes sorting lies from truths extremely difficult. I do believe she is not the Night Watcher, contrary to what some stories claim. From Hesse's Mythica, page 231. Shallan sketched in her notepad as she stood on the deck of the Honor Spren ship, the wind of its passing ruffling her hair. Next to her, Kaladin rested his arms on the ship's railing, overlooking the ocean of beads. Their current vessel, Honor's Path, was faster than Eco's merchant ship. It had mandras rigged not only at the front, but also to wing-like rails jutting from the sides. It had 5 decks, including 3 below for crew and storage, but those were mostly empty. It felt like a war vessel intended to carry troops, but which didn't currently have a full complement. The main deck was similar to the top deck of human ships, but this craft also had a high deck running down its center from prow to stern. Narrower than the main deck, it was supported by broad white pillars and probably offered an excellent view. Shallan could no more than guess, as only the crew was allowed up there. At least they'd been let out. Shallan and the others had spent their first week on board, locked in the hold. The Honor Spren had given no explanation when, finally, the humans and Pattern had been released and allowed to move on deck, so long as they stayed off the high deck and did not make nuisances of themselves. Syl remained imprisoned. "Look here," Shallan tipped her sketched map toward Kaladin. "Pattern says there's an Honor Spren stronghold near Carbranth in our world. They call it Unyielding Fidelity. We've got to be heading there. We went southwest after leaving Celebrant."
"While we were in the hold," Kaladin said softly, "I saw a sea of tiny flames through the porthole. A town on our side?"
"That was here," Shallan said, pointing at her map. "See where the rivers meet, just southwest of the lake? There are towns there, on our side. The river peninsulas should have blocked our way, but the Spren seemed to have cut a canal through the stone. We wove east around the Isingway River, then swung west again."
"So you're saying..."
She pointed at a spot with her charcoal pencil. "We're right about here, heading toward Carbranth across the Frostlands." Kaladin rubbed his chin. He glanced toward an Honor Spren passing above and narrowed his eyes. He'd spent their first day of freedom arguing with the Honor Spren, which had ended with him locked up for another 2 days.
"Kaladin," Shallan said. "They need to let her out," he said. "Prisons are terrible for me. They'll be worse for her."
"Then help me figure out a way off this ship." He looked back at her map and pointed.
"Thalen City," he said. "If we continue this direction, we'll eventually pass just north of it."
"Just north in this case meaning more than 300 miles away from it in the middle of a bead ocean."
"Far closer than we've been to any other Oathgate," he said. "And if we can get the ship to swing south a little, we could maybe get to the coast of Longbrow's Straits, which will be stone on this side. Or do you think we should still be trying for Azure's Phantom Perpendicularity in the Horneater Peaks?"
He spoke with such authority, such a compelling sense of motion. "I don't know, Kaladin."
"We're heading in the right direction," he said, firm. "I saw it, Shallan. We just need to continue with the ship a few more days, then find a way to escape. We can hike to the Oathgate on this side, and you can transfer us to Thalen City.
It sounded reasonable. Well, except for the fact that the Honorspren were watching them, and the fact that the Fused knew where they were now, and were probably gathering forces to give chase, and the fact that they had to somehow escape from a ship in the middle of a sea of beads, reach the shore, then hike 200 miles to reach Thalen City. All of that could fade before Kaladin's passion. All but the worry that topped them all. Could she even make the Oath Gate work? She couldn't help feeling that too much of this plan depended on her. Yet those eyes...
We could try a mutiny, Vale said. Maybe those Mistspren who do all the work will listen. They can't be happy, always hopping about, following Honorspren orders.
I don't know, Kaladin said, voice hushing as one of these Spren, made entirely of mist, save for the hands and face, walked past.
Could be reckless. I can't fight them all.
What if you had Stormlight? Vale asked. If I could pinch it back for you, what then? He rubbed at his chin again. Storms, he looked good with a beard. All ragged and untamed through the face, contrasted by his sharp blue uniform. Like a wild spren of passion, trapped by the oaths and codes. Wait, had that been Vale?
Shallan shook free of the momentary drifting of personality. Kaladin didn't seem to notice.
Maybe, he said. You really think you can steal the gemstones back for us? I'd feel a lot more comfortable with some Stormlight in my pocket.
Shallan swallowed. Kaladin, I don't know if... Maybe it would be best not to fight them. They're Honorspren.
They're jailers, he said, but then calmed. But they are taking us the right direction, if only inadvertently. What if we stole back our Stormlight, then simply jumped off the ship? Can you find a bead to make us a passage toward land like you did at Kolinar?
I guess I could try. But wouldn't the Honorspren simply swing around and pick us up again?
I'll think about that, Kaladin said. Try and find some beads that we can use.
He walked across the deck, passing by Pattern, who stood with hands clasped behind his back, thinking number-filled thoughts. Kaladin eventually settled beside Azure, speaking softly with her, probably outlining their plan. Such that it was. Shallan tucked her sketchpad under her arm and looked over the side of the ship. So many beads, so many souls, piled on top of each other. Kaladin wanted her to search through all of that for something helpful? She glanced toward a passing sailor, a Mistspren who had gaseous limbs that ended in gloved hands. Her feminine face was the shape of a porcelain mask, and she, like the others of her kind, wore a vest and trousers that seemed to float on a body made of swirling, indistinct fog.
Is there a way for me to get some of those beads? Shallan asked.
The Mistspren stopped in place.
Please? Shallan asked.
The sailor jogged off, and then returned a short time later with the captain, a tall, imperious-looking Honorspren named Notum. He glowed a soft blue-white and wore an outdated but sharp naval uniform, which was part of his substance. His beard was of a cut she hadn't seen before, with the chin shaved, almost like a horn-eater, but with a thin mustache and a sculpted line of hair that ran from it up his cheeks and blended into his sideburns.
"You have a request?" he asked her.
"I would like some beads, Captain," Shallan said. "To practice my art, if you please. I need to do something to pass the time on this trip."
"Manifesting random souls is dangerous, Lightweaver. I would not have you doing it wantonly upon my decks."
Keeping the true nature of her order from him had proven impossible, considering how Pattern followed her around.
I promise not to manifest anything, she said. I merely want to practice visualizing the souls inside the beads. It's part of my training. He studied her, clasping his hands behind his back. Very well, he said, which surprised her. She hadn't expected that to work. He gave an order, however, and a mist spren lowered a bucket on a rope to get her some beads. Thank you, Shallan said.
It was a simple request, the captain said. Just be careful. I suppose you'd need Stormlight to manifest anyway, but still. Be careful.
What happens if we carry the beads away too far? Shallan asked, curious as the mist spren handed her the bucket. They are tied to objects in the physical realm, right?
You can carry them anywhere in Shadesmar you wish, the captain said. Their tie is through the spiritual realm and distance doesn't matter. However, drop them, let them free, and they'll work their way back to the general location of their physical counterpart.
He eyed her.
You are very new to all of this. When did it begin again? Radiance? Swearing ideals?
Well, her mother's dead face, eyes burned. It hasn't been going on for long, Shallan said. A few months for most of us. A few years for some.
We had hoped this day would never come.
He turned to march toward the high deck. Captain, Shallan asked, why did you let us out? If you're so worried about Radiance, why not just keep us locked away?
It wasn't honorable, the captain said. You are not prisoners.
What are we, then?
Stormfather only knows. Fortunately, I don't have to sort it out. We'll deliver you and the ancient daughter to someone with more authority. Until then, please try not to break my ship.
As days passed, Shallan fell into a routine on the Honorspren ship. She spent most days sitting on the main deck, near the whale. They let her have beads in plenitude to play with, but most of them were useless things. Rocks, sticks, bits of clothing. Still, it was useful to visualize them, hold them, meditate on them, understand them. Objects had desires. Simple desires, true, but they could adhere to those desires with passion, as she'd learned during her few attempts at soul casting. Now she didn't try to change those desires. She just learned to touch them and to listen. She felt a familiarity to some of the beads, a growing understanding that perhaps she could make their souls blossom from beads into full-fledged objects on this side, manifestations they were called. Between practices with the beads, she did sketches. Some worked, some didn't. She wore the skirt that Adolin had purchased for her, hoping it would make her feel more like Shallan. Vale kept poking through, which could be useful, but the way it just kind of happened was frightening to her. This was the opposite of what Wit had told her to do, wasn't it? Kaladin spent the days pacing the main deck, glaring at Honorspren he passed. He looked like a caged beast. Shallan felt some of his same urgency. They hadn't seen any sign of the enemy, not since that day in Celebrant. But she slept uneasily each night, worried that she'd wake to calls of an enemy ship approaching them. Notum had confirmed that the Voidspren were creating their own empire in Shadesmar, and they controlled cultivation's perpendicularity, the easiest way to get between realms. Shallan sorted through another handful of beads, feeling the impression of a small dagger, a rock, a piece of fruit that had started to see itself as something new, something that could grow into its own identity, rather than merely a part of the whole. What would someone see when looking at her soul? Would it give a single, unified impression? Many different ideas of what it was to be her? Nearby, the ship's first mate, an Honorspren woman with short hair and an angular face, left the hold. Curiously, she was carrying Azure's shard blade. She stepped onto the main deck beneath the shadow of the high deck and went hiking toward Azure, who stood watching the ocean pass nearby. Curious, Shallan pocketed the bead representing a knife, just in case, then left the bucket on top of her sketchbook and walked over. Nearby, Kaladin was pacing again, and he also noticed the sword. "Draw her carefully," Azure said to Berea, the first mate, as Shallan approached. "Don't pull her out all the way. She doesn't know you." Berea wore a uniform like the captain's, all stiff and no nonsense. She undid a small latch on the shard blade, eased it from its sheath a half inch, then drew in a sharp breath. "It tingles." "She's investigating you," Azure said. "It really is as you say," Berea said. "A shard blade that requires no spren, no enslavement. This is something else. How did you do it?" "I will trade knowledge per our deal once we arrive." Berea snapped the blade closed. "A good bond, human. We accept your offer." Surprisingly, the woman held the weapon toward Azure, who took it. Shallan stepped closer, watching as Berea walked off toward the steps up to the high deck. "How?" Shallan asked, as Azure belted on the sword. "You got them to give your weapon back?" "They're quite reasonable," Azure said, "so long as you make the right promises. I've negotiated for passage and an exchange of information, once we reach lasting integrity." "You've done what?" Kaladin said. He stalked over. "What did I just hear?" "I've made a deal, Stormblessed," Azure said, meeting his gaze. "I'll be free once we reach their stronghold." "We're not going to reach their stronghold," Kaladin said softly. "We're going to escape." "I'm not your soldier, or even Adolin's subject. I'm going to do what gets me to the perpendicularity, and barring that, I'm going to find out what these people know about the criminal I'm hunting."
"You'd throw away honor for a bounty?"
"I'm only here because you two, through no fault of your own, I admit, trapped me. I don't blame you, but I'm also not indebted to your mission."
"Traitor," he said softly.
Azure gave him a flat look. "At some point, Cal, you need to admit that the best thing you can do right now is go with these Spren. At their stronghold, you could clear up this misunderstanding, then move on.
That could take weeks."
"I wasn't aware we were on a schedule. Dalinar is in danger."
"Don't you care
about a man I don't know?" Azure said. "In danger from a threat you can't define, happening at a time you can't pinpoint?" She folded her arms. "Forgive me for not sharing in your anxiety." Kaladin set his jaw, then turned and stalked away, right up the steps toward the high deck. They weren't supposed to go up there, but sometimes rules didn't seem to apply to Kaladin Stormblessed. Azure shook her head, then turned and gripped the ship railing. "He's just having a bad day, Azure," Shallan said. "I think he feels anxious because his Spren is imprisoned."
"Maybe. I've seen a lot of young hotheads in my time, and young Stormblessed feels like another color altogether. I wish I knew what it was he was so desperate to prove."
Shallan nodded, then glanced again at Azure's sword. "You said the Honor Spren have information on your bounty?"
"Yeah. Berea thinks the weapon I'm chasing passed through their fortress a few years ago."
"Your bounty is a weapon?"
"And the one who brought it to your land. A shard blade that bleeds black smoke."
Azure turned toward her.
"I don't mean to be callous, Shallan. I realize you're all eager to return to your lands. I can even believe that, through some tide of fortune, Kaladin Stormblessed has foreseen some danger."
Shallan shivered.
"Be wary of anyone who claims to be able to see the future.
But, Azure continued, even if his mission is critical, it doesn't mean mine isn't as well.
Shallan glanced toward the high deck, where she could faintly hear Kaladin making a disturbance. Azure turned and clasped her hands, adopting a far-off look. She seemed to want to be alone, so Shallan trailed back toward where she'd left her things. She settled down and removed the bucket from her sketchpad. The pages fluttered, showing various versions of herself, each one wrong. She kept drawing Vale's face on Radiant's body, or vice versa. She started back into her latest bucket of beads. She found a shirt and a bowl, but the next bead was a fallen tree branch. This brought up memories of the last time she'd dipped into Shadesmar, freezing, near death, on the banks of the ocean. Why hadn't she tried to soul cast since then? She'd made excuses, avoided thinking about it, had focused all her attention on light weaving. She'd ignored soul casting because she'd failed, because she was afraid. Could she invent someone who wasn't afraid? Someone new, since Vale was broken, and had been since that failure in the Kulinar market.
Shallan? Adolin asked, coming over to her. Are you all right?
She shook herself. How long had she been sitting there?
I'm fine, she said. Just remembering.
Good things or bad?
All memories are bad, she said immediately, then looked away, blushing.
He settled down next to her. Storms, his overt concern was annoying. She didn't want him worrying about her.
Shallan? He asked.
Shallan will be fine, she said. I'll bring her back in a moment. I just have to recover her.
Adolin glanced at the fluttering pages with the different versions of her. He reached out and hugged her, saying nothing, which turned out to be the right thing to say. She closed her eyes and tried to pull herself together.
Which one do you like the most? She finally asked.
Vale is the one who wears the white outfit, but I'm having trouble with her right now. She peeks out sometimes when I don't want, but then won't come when I need her.
Radiant is the one who practices with the sword. I made her prettier than the others, and you can talk to her about dueling. But some of the time I'll have to be someone who can light weave. I'm trying to think of who she should be.
Ash's eyes, Shallan.
Shallan's broken, so I think I'm trying to hide her. Like a cracked vase, where you turn the nice side toward the room, hiding the flaw. I'm not doing it on purpose, but it's happening, and I don't know how to stop it.
He held her.
No advice? She asked, numb. Everyone always seems to have loads.
You're the smart one. What can I say?
It's confusing, being all these people. I feel like I'm presenting different faces all the time, lying to everyone because I'm different inside. That doesn't make sense, does it?
She squeezed her eyes shut again.
I'll pull it back together. I'll be someone.
He
pulled her tight again as the ship rocked.
Shallan, I killed Sadeas.
She blinked, then pulled back and looked him in the eyes.
What?
I killed Sadeas,
Adolin whispered.
We met in the corridors of the tower. He started insulting Father, talking about the terrible things he was going to do to us, and I couldn't listen anymore. Couldn't stand there and look at his smug red face, so I attacked him.
So all that time we were hunting a killer?
It was me. I'm the one the Spren copied the first time. I kept thinking about how I was lying to you, to Father, and to everyone. The Honorable Adolin Kulin, the consummate duelist, a murderer. And Shallan, I don't think I'm sorry. Sadeas was a monster.
He repeatedly tried to get us killed. His betrayal caused the deaths of many of my friends. When I formally challenged him to a duel, he wiggled out of it. He was smarter than me, smarter than Father. He'd have won eventually. So I killed him. He pulled her to him and took a deep breath. Shallan shivered, then whispered, "Good for you." "Shallan, you're a Radiant. You're not supposed to condone something like this." "I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I only know that the world is a better place for the death of Toral Sadius. Father wouldn't like it if he knew." "Your father is a great man," Shallan said, "who is perhaps better off not knowing everything, for his own good." Adolin breathed in again. With her head pressed to his chest, the air moving in and out of his lungs was audible, and his voice was different, more resonant.
"Yeah," he said. "Yeah, maybe. In any case, I think I know what it's like to feel like you're lying to the world. So maybe if you figure out what to do, you could tell me."
She leaned into him, listening to his heartbeat, his breathing. She felt his warmth.
"You never did say," she whispered, "which one you prefer."
"It's obvious. I prefer the real you."
"Which one is that, though?"
"She's the one I'm talking to right now." "You don't have to hide, Shallan. You don't have to push it down. Maybe the vase is cracked, but that only means it can show what's inside. And I like what's inside."
"So warm, comfortable, and strikingly unfamiliar. What was this peace? This place without fear?"
Noises from above spoiled it. Pulling back, she looked toward the upper deck.
"What is the bridge boy doing up there?"
"Sir," the misty sailor Spren said in broken Alethi. "Sir, not. Please, not."
Kaladin ignored her, looking through the spyglass he'd taken from the chain nearby. He stood on the rear section of the high deck, searching the sky. That fused had watched them leave Celebrant. The enemy would find them eventually.
Dalinar alone, surrounded by 9 shadows.
Kaladin finally handed the spyglass to the anxious Mist Spren. The captain of the ship, in a tight uniform that probably would have been uncomfortable on a human, approached and dismissed the sailor, who scuttled away.
"I would prefer," Captain Notum said, "if you would refrain from upsetting my crew."
"I would prefer that you let Syl go," Kaladin snapped, feeling her anxiety through their bond. "As I told you, the Stormfather has condoned what she did. There is no crime."
The short Spren clasped his hands behind his back. Of all the Spren they'd interacted with on this side, the Honor Spren seemed to share the most human mannerisms.
"I could lock you away again," the captain said, "or even have you tossed overboard."
"Yeah? And what would that do to Syl? She told me that losing a bonded Radiant was hard on their Spren."
"True. But she would recover, and it might be for the best. Your relationship with the ancient daughter is inappropriate."
"It's not like we eloped."
"It is worse, as the Nahel bond is far more intimate a relationship. The linking of spirits. This is not a thing that should be done lightly, unsupervised. Besides, the ancient daughter is too young."
"Young?" Kaladin said. "Didn't you just call her ancient?"
"It would be difficult to explain to a human."
"Try anyway," the captain sighed.
"The Honor Spren were created by Honor himself many thousands of years ago. You call him the Almighty, and I'm afraid he's dead."
"Which makes sense, as it's pretty much the only excuse I would have accepted."
"That wasn't levity, human," Notum said. "Your god is dead."
"Not my god. But please, continue."
"Well,"
Notum frowned. He'd obviously thought the concept of Honor's death would have been more difficult for Kaladin to accept.
Well, sometime before his death, Honor stopped creating Honor Spren. We don't know why, but he asked the Stormfather to do it instead.
He was setting up an heir. I've heard that the Stormfather is a kind of image of the Almighty.
More like a weak shadow, Notam said. You actually understand this?
Understand? No. Follow? Mostly.
The Stormfather created only a handful of children. All of these, save Silfrenna, were destroyed in the Recreants, becoming Deadeyes. This loss stung the Stormfather, who didn't create again for centuries. When he was finally moved to remake the Honor Spren, he created only 10 more. My great-grandmother was among them. She created my grandfather, who created my father, who eventually created me. It was only recently, even by your reckoning, that the ancient daughter was rediscovered. Asleep. So in answer to your question, yes, Silfrenna is both old and young. Old of form, but young of mind. She is not ready to deal with humans, and certainly not ready for a bond. I wouldn't trust myself with one of those.
You think we're too changeable, don't you? That we can't keep our oaths?
I'm no high spren, the captain spat. I can see that the variety of humankind is what gives you strength. Your ability to change your minds, to go against what you once thought, can be a great advantage. But your bond is dangerous, without honor. There will not be enough checks upon your power. You risk disaster.
How? Notam shook his head, then looked away, off into the distance.
I cannot answer. You should not have bonded Silfrenna either way. She is too precious to the Stormfather.
Regardless, Kaladin said, you're about half a year too late, so you might as well accept it.
Not too late. Killing you would free her, though it would be painful for her. There are other ways, at least until the final ideal is sworn.
I can't imagine you'd be willing to kill a man for this, Kaladin said. Tell me truthfully, is there honor in that, Notam? He looked away as if ashamed.
You know Syl shouldn't be locked away like this, Kaladin said softly. You're an honor spren too, Notam. You must know how she feels.
The captain didn't speak. Finally, Kaladin gritted his teeth and strode off. The captain didn't demand that Kaladin go down below, so he took up a position at the very front of the high deck, hanging out over the bow. With one hand on the flagpole, Kaladin rested a boot on the low railing overlooking the sea of beads. He wore his uniform today, since he'd been able to wash it the previous night. Honor's Path had good accommodations for humans, including a device that made a great deal of water. The design, if not the vessel itself, probably stretched back centuries to when Radiance traveled Shadesmar with their spren. Beneath him, the ship creaked as sailors shifted her heading. To the left, he could see land. Longbrow's Straits, on the other side of which they'd find Thalen City, tantalizingly close. Technically, he was no longer Dalinar's bodyguard, but storms during the Weeping, Kaladin had nearly abandoned his duty. The thought of Dalinar needing him now, while Kaladin was trapped and unable to help, brought a pain that was almost physical. He'd failed so many people in his life. Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination. Together these words formed the first ideal of the Windrunners. He'd said them, but he wasn't certain he understood them. The second ideal made more direct sense. I will protect those who cannot protect themselves. Straightforward, yes, but overwhelming. The world was a place of suffering. Was he really supposed to try to prevent it all? I will protect even those I hate, so long as it is right. The third ideal meant standing up for anyone, if needed. But who decided what was right? Which side was he supposed to protect? The fourth ideal was unknown to him, but the closer he drew to it, the more frightened he became. What would it demand of him? Something crystallized in the air beside him,
a line of light like a pinprick in the air that trailed a long, soft luminescence. A mist-spren sailor near him gasped, then nudged his companion. She whispered something in awe, then both scrambled away.
"What have I done now?"
A second pinprick of light appeared near him, spinning, coordinated with the other. They made spiral trails in the air. He'd have called them spren, but they weren't any he'd seen before. Besides, spren on this side didn't seem to vanish and appear. They were always here, weren't they?
Kaladin?
A voice whispered in his head.
Syl?
He whispered.
What are you doing?
It was rare that he heard her directly in his mind.
Standing on the deck. What's happened?
Nothing. I can just feel your mind right now. Stronger than usual. They let you out?
Yes. I've tried to get them to set you free.
They're stubborn. It's an honor spren trait which I fortunately escaped.
Syl, what is the fourth ideal?
You know you have to figure that out on your own, silly.
It's going to be hard, isn't it?
Yes. You're close.
He leaned forward, watching the mandras float beneath them. A small flock of glory spren zipped past. They took a moment to fly up and spin about him before heading to the south, faster than the ship. The strange pinpricks of light continued to whirl around him. Sailors gathered behind, making a ruckus until the captain pushed through and gaped.
"What are they?"
Kaladin asked, nodding toward the pinpricks of light.
"Wind spren."
"Oh." They did remind him a little of the way wind spren would fly on gusts of wind.
"They're common. Why is everyone so upset?"
"They're not common on this side," the captain said. "They live on your side. Almost completely. I've never seen them before. They're beautiful."
"Perhaps I haven't been giving Notam enough credit," Kaladin thought. "Perhaps he would listen to a different kind of plea."
"Captain," Kaladin said, "I have taken an oath as a Windrunner to protect, and the bondsmith who leads us is in danger."
"Bondsmith?" the captain said. "Which one?"
"Dalinar Kholin."
"No. Which bondsmith of the three?"
"I don't know what you mean," Kaladin said, "but his spren is the Stormfather. I told you I'd spoken to him."
It seemed, from the captain's aghast expression, that perhaps Kaladin should have mentioned this fact earlier.
"I must keep my oath," Kaladin said. "I need you to let Syl go, then take us to a place where we can transfer between realms."
"I've sworn an oath myself," the captain said, "to honor and to the truths we follow."
"Honor is dead," Kaladin said, "but the bondsmith is not. You say that you can see how human variety gives us strength? Well, I challenge you to do the same. See beyond the letter of your rules. You must understand that my need to defend the bondsmith is more important than your need to deliver Syl, especially considering that the Stormfather is well aware of her location."
The captain glanced at the windspren, which were still spinning about Kaladin, leaving trails that drifted the entire length of the ship before fading.
"I will consider," the captain said.
Adolin stopped at the top of the steps just behind Shallan. Kaladin, a storming bridgeman, stood at the bow of the ship surrounded by glowing lines of light. They illuminated his heroic figure, determined, undaunted, one hand on the prow's flagpole, wearing his crisp wall-guard uniform. The ship's spren gazed upon him as if he were a storming herald come to announce the reclamation of the Tranquiline Halls. Just ahead of him, Shallan seemed to change. It was in her bearing, the way she stopped resting lightly on one foot and stood solidly on 2 feet instead, the way her posture shifted, and the way that she seemed to melt upon seeing Kaladin, lips rising to a grin. Blushing, she adopted a fond, even eager expression. Adolin breathed out slowly.
He'd caught those glimpses from her before and seen the sketches of Kaladin in her book. But looking at her now, he couldn't deny what he was seeing. She was practically leering.
"I need to draw that," she said.
But she just stood there instead, staring at him. Adolin sighed and made his way up onto the high deck. Seemed they weren't forbidden here any longer. He joined Pattern, who had come up another set of steps, and was humming happily to himself.
"Kind of hard to compete with that," Adolin noted.
"Hmm," Pattern said.
"You know, I've never really felt like this before. It's not just Kaladin, it's all of this, and what's happening to us." He shook his head.
"We certainly are an odd bunch."
"Yes, seven people. Odd."
"It's not like I can blame him. It's not as if he's trying to be like he is."
Nearby, a sailor Spren, one of the few who hadn't gathered around Stormblessed and his halo of glowing lights, lowered a spyglass. She frowned, then raised it again. Then she began to call out in the Spren language. People tore themselves away from Kaladin and crowded around. Adolin stepped back, watching until Kaladin and Shallan joined him. Azure crested the steps nearby, looking concerned.
"What is it?"
Kaladin asked.
"No idea," Adolin said.
The captain waved for the Mist Spren and Honor Spren to make space, then took the spyglass. He finally lowered it and looked back at Kaladin.
"You were right, human. When you said you might be followed,"
he waved Kaladin and Adolin forward.
"Look low on the horizon at 210 degrees.
Kaladin looked through the spyglass, then breathed out. He extended it toward Adolin, but Shallan snatched it first.
"Storms," she said. "There's at least six of them."
"Eight, my scout says," the captain replied.
Adolin finally got his turn. Because of the black sky, it took him forever to spot the distant specks flying toward the ship. The Fused. 109. Neshua Kadal.
Reshafir, the Midnight Mother, is another unmade who appears to have been destroyed at Ahara Yetiam. From Hesse's Mythica, page 250.
Dalinar ran his fingers along a line of red crystal embedded in the stone wall. The little vein started at the ceiling and wound all the way down the wall, within the pattern of the light green and gray strata, to the floor. It was smooth to the touch, distinct in texture from the rock around it. He rubbed his thumb across the crystal.
"It's like the other strata lines ripple out from this one, getting wider as they move away from it."
"What does it mean?"
he asked Navani. The two of them stood in a storage room near the top of the tower.
"I don't know," Navani said, "but we're finding more and more of them. What do you know of essential theology?"
"A thing for ardents and scribes," he said.
"And soul casters?" "That is a garnet."
"Garnet, let's see.
Emeralds for grain, that was the most important, and heliodores for flesh. They raised animals for their gem hearts to provide those two. He was pretty sure diamonds made quartz and storms, he didn't know much about the others. Topaz made stone, they'd needed those for the bunkers on the shattered plains."
"Garnets make blood," Navani said. "We don't have any soul casters that use them."
"Blood? That sounds useless."
"Well, scientifically, we think soul casters were able to use garnets to make any liquid that was soluble in water as opposed to oil-based. Your eyes are crossing."
"Sorry."
He felt at the crystals.
"Another mystery. When will we find answers?"
"The records below," Navani said, "speak of this tower like a living thing, with a heart of emerald and ruby, and now these veins of garnet."
He stood up, looking around the darkened room, which held the monarch's chairs between meetings. It was lit by a sphere he'd set on a stone ledge by the door.
"If this tower was alive," Dalinar said, Then it's dead now.
Or sleeping. But if that's the case, I have no idea how to wake it. We've tried infusing the heart like a fabrial, even had Renarin try to push Stormlight into it. Nothing's worked.
Dalinar picked up a chair, then pushed the door open.
He held the door with his foot, shooing away a guard who tried to do it for him, while Navani collected the sphere and joined him in the conference room in front of the glass wall looking toward the origin. He sat down the chair and checked his forearm clock. Stupid thing. He was growing far too dependent upon it. The arm device had a pain reel in it, too, a kind of fabrial with a spren that feasted upon pain. He'd never yet remembered to use the thing. 12 minutes left. Assuming Elthabar's calculations were correct. With span reads confirming the storm's arrival hours before in the east, the calculations were down to judging the speed of the storm. A runner arrived at the door. Creer, the duty sergeant for guards today, accepted it. He was a bridgeman from Bridge 20, was it? He and his brother were both guards, though Creer wore spectacles, unlike his twin. "Message from Brightness Kahl, sir," Creer said, handing the note to Navani. It looked like it had come from a span reed. It had marks on the sides from the clips that had held it to the board, and the tight letters covered only the center of the page.
"From Fen," Navani said. "A merchant ship vanished in the southern depths this morning, just off Marat. They went ashore at what they hoped was a safe distance, to use the span reed, and reported a large number of ships at dock along the coast. Glowing figures rose from a nearby city and descended upon them, and the communication cut off."
"Confirmation," Dalinar said, "that the enemy is building up a navy. If that fleet launched from Marat before his own ships were ready, or if the winds were wrong when his armada did launch." "Have Teshev write back to the Thalens," Dalinar said. "Suggest to Queen Fen and our other allies that we hold the next meeting in Thalen City. We'll want to inspect fortifications and shore up the ground defenses." He sent the guards to wait outside, then approached the window and checked his wrist clock. Just a few minutes left. He thought he could see the storm wall below, but it was difficult to be sure from this height. He wasn't accustomed to looking down on a high storm.
"Are you sure you want to do this?" Navani asked.
"The Stormfather asked me something similar this morning. I asked him if he knew the first rule of warfare."
"Is that the one about terrain, or the one about attacking where the enemy is weak?"
He could pick it out now, a dark ripple surging through the sky below. "Neither," Dalinar said.
"Ah, right," Navani said. "I should have guessed."
She was nervous, with good cause. It was the first time he'd stepped back into the visions since meeting Odium. But Dalinar felt blind in this war. He didn't know what the enemy wanted or how they intended to exploit their conquests. "The first rule of war, know your enemy." He raised his chin as the storm slammed into Urethiru, roughly at the height of its third tier. All went white. Then Dalinar appeared in the ancient palace, the large open room with sandstone pillars and a balcony that looked out on an antiquated version of Kolinar. Noadon strode through the center of the pillared chamber. This was the youthful Noadon, not the elderly version from his recent dream. Dalinar had taken the place of a guardsman near the doors. A slender Parshendi woman appeared beside the king in the spot Dalinar had occupied so long ago. Her skin was marbled red and white in a complex pattern, and she had long orange-red hair. She looked down with red eyes, surprised by her sudden appearance and the robes she wore, those of an advisor to the king. Noadon began speaking to her as if she were his friend Karm.
"I don't know what to do, old friend."
"Odium sees the division has begun," the Stormfather warned Dalinar. "The enemy is focusing on us. He comes.
Can you hold him back?"
"I am but a shadow of a god. His power vastly outstrips my own."
He sounded smaller than Dalinar was accustomed to. Like the quintessential bully, the Stormfather didn't know how to face someone stronger than himself.
Can you hold him back? I need time to talk to her.
I will try.
Good enough. Unfortunately, it meant that Dalinar didn't have time to let this Parshendi woman experience the vision in full. He strode toward her and Noadan.
Venli turned around. Where was she? This wasn't Murat. Had Odium summoned her again?
No. It's the wrong storm. He doesn't come during high storms.
A young Alethi male in robes was blathering at her. She ignored him, biting her hand to see if she could feel the pain. She could. She shook her hand and looked down at the robes she wore. This couldn't be a dream. It was too real.
My friend, the Alethi man asked, are you well? I realize that events have taken their toll on us all, but...
Footsteps rang loudly on the stone as another Alethi man approached, wearing a crisp blue uniform. White dusted the hair at his temples, and his face wasn't as round as other human faces. His features could almost have been those of a listener, even if that nose was wrong and the face bore far more creases than a listener's ever would.
Wait, she thought, attuning curiosity. Is that... Disturbance on the battlefield, sir, the older man said to her companion. You are needed immediately. What is this? I didn't hear... They didn't say what it was, your majesty. Only that you are urgently requested.
The human king drew his lips to a tight line, and then, obviously frustrated, stalked toward the doorway.
Come, he said to Venli.
The older man grabbed her arm above the elbow.
Don't, he said softly. We need to talk.
This is the Alethi warlord.
My name is Dalinar Kolin, the man said. I lead the Alethi, and you're seeing a vision of past events. Only your mind has been transported, not your body. We two are the only real people here.
She yanked her arm out of his hand and attuned irritation. Why have you brought me here?
I want to talk.
Of course you do. Now that you're losing, now that we've seized your capital, now you want to talk. What of the years spent slaughtering my people on the shattered plains?
It had been a game to them.
Listener spy reports had shown the humans had enjoyed the sport on the shattered plains, claiming wealth and listener lives as part of a grand contest.
We were willing to talk when you sent your emissary, Dalinar said. The Shard Bearer. I'm willing to talk again now. I want to forget old grievances, even those personal to me.
Venli walked away, still attuned to irritation. How have you brought me to this place? Is this a prison?
Is this your work? Odium?
Testing my loyalty with a false vision of the enemy? She was using the old rhythms. She'd never been able to do that when Odium's attention had been on her.
I'll send you back soon, Kolin said, catching up to her.
Though he was not short for a human, her current form was a good 6 inches taller than he was.
Please, just hear me out. I need to know. What would a truce between our people cost?
A truce? She asked to amusement, stopping near the balcony. A truce?
Peace, no desolation, no war. What would it cost?
Well, for a start, it would cost your kingdom. He grimaced. His words were dead, like those of all humans, but he wore his feelings on his face. So much passion and emotion.
Is that why the Spren betrayed us for them? What is Alethkar to you? He said. I can help you build a new nation on the shattered plains. I will give you laborers to raise cities, ardents to teach any skill you want, wealth as payment in ransom for Kolinar and its people, a formal apology. Whatever you demand.
I demand that we keep Alethkar. His face became a mask of pain. his brow furrowed. Why must you live there? To you, Alethkar is a place to conquer, but it's my homeland. She attuned reprimand. Don't you understand? The people who live there, the singers, my cousins, are from Alethkar. That is their homeland, too. The only difference between them and you is that they were born as slaves and you as their master. He winced. Perhaps some other accommodation, then. A dividing of the kingdom? A Parshman high prince? He seemed shocked to be considering it. She attuned resolve. Your tone implies you know that would be impossible. There can be no accommodation, human. Send me from this place. We can meet on the battlefield.
No.
He seized her arm again.
I don't know what the accommodation will be, but we can find one. Let me prove to you that I want to negotiate instead of fight.
You can start, she said to irritation, pulling away from him, by not assaulting me. She wasn't certain she could fight him, honestly. Her current body was tall but fragile, and in truth, she'd never been proficient at battle, even during the days when she'd taken an appropriate form.
At least, let us try a negotiation, he said. Please.
He didn't sound very pleading. He'd grown stern, face like a stone, glaring. With the rhythms, you could infuse your tone with the mood you wished to convey, even if your emotions weren't cooperating. Humans didn't have that tool. They were as dull as the dullest slave. A sudden thump resounded in the vision. Venli attuned anxiety and rushed out onto the balcony. A half-destroyed city stretched below, where a battle had happened, dead heaped in piles. That pounding sounded again. The air was breaking. The clouds and sky seemed to be a mural painted on an enormous dome ceiling. And as the pounds continued, a web of cracks appeared overhead. Beyond them shone a vivid yellow light. He's here, she whispered, then waved toward it. That's why there can't be a negotiation, human. He knows we don't need one. You want peace? Surrender. Give yourselves up and hope that he doesn't care to destroy you. A faint hope, considering what Rhine had said to her about exterminating the humans. With the next pound, the sky fractured and a hole appeared overhead, a powerful light shining beyond. The very shards of the air, broken like a mirror, were sucked into that light. A pulse of power blasted from the hole, shaking the city with a terrible vibration. It tossed Venli to the balcony's floor. Colin reached to help her, but a second pulse caused him to fall as well. The bricks in the room's wall separated from one another and began to float apart. The boards that made up the balcony began to lift, nails floating into the sky. A guard ran to the balcony but stumbled, and his very skin started to separate into water and a dried husk. Everything just came apart. A wind rose around Venli, pulling debris toward that hole in the sky and the brilliant, terrible light beyond. Boards shredded to splinters. Bricks floated past her head. She growled, the rhythm of resolve thumping inside her as she grabbed and clung to parts of the floor that hadn't yet separated. That burning! She knew it well, the terrible pain of odium's heat scalding her skin, scorching her until her very bones, somehow still able to feel, became ash. It happened every time he gave her orders. What worse thing would he do if he found her fraternizing with the enemy? She attuned determination and crawled away from the light. Escape! She reached the chamber beyond the balcony and lurched to her feet, trying to run. The wind pulled at her, making each step a struggle. Overhead, the ceilings separated in a single magnificent burst, each brick exploding away from the others, then streaming toward the void. The pieces of the unfortunate guard rose after them, a sack drained of grain, a puppet with no controlling hand. Venley dropped to the ground again and continued crawling, but the stones of the floor separated, floating upward with her on them. Soon she was scrambling precariously from one floating piece of stone to another. The rhythm of resolve still attuned, she dared to glance backward. The hole had widened, and the all-consuming light feasted on the streams of refuse. She turned away, desperate to do what she could to delay her own burning. Then she stopped and looked back again. Dalinar Kolin stood on the balcony, and he was glowing. Neshua Kadal, radiant knight. Without meaning to, she attuned the rhythm of awe. Around Kolin, the balcony was stable. Boards trembled and quivered at his feet, but did not move into the sky. The balcony railing had ripped apart to either side of him, but where he held to it with a firm grip, it remained secure. He was her enemy, and yet, long ago, these humans had resisted her gods. Yes, the enslavement of her cousins, the singers, was impossible to ignore. Still, the humans had fought, and had won. The listeners remembered this as a song sung to the rhythm of awe. Neshua Kadal. The calm, gentle light spread from Dalinar Kolin's hand to the railing, then down into the floor. Boards and stones sank down from the air, re-knitting. Venli's current block of stone settled back into place. All through the city, buildings burst apart and zoomed upward, but the walls of this tower returned to their positions. Venli immediately made for the steps downward. If whatever Kolin was doing stopped, she wanted to be on solid rock. She wound her way to the ground floor, then, once on the street, she positioned herself near the balcony and Kolin's influence. Above, Odium's light went out. Stones and splinters rained down on the city, crashing about her. Dried bodies dropped like discarded clothing. Venli pressed back against the tower wall, attuning anxiety, raising her arm against the dust of the debris. The hole remained in the sky, though the light was gone from behind it. Below, the rubbled remains of the city seemed a sham. No cries of fear, no moans of pain. Bodies were just husks, skins lying empty on the ground. A sudden pounding broke the air behind her, opening another hole, lower down and near the edge of the city. The sky crumbled into the gap, revealing that hateful light again. It consumed everything near it, wall, buildings, even the ground disintegrating and flowing into the maw. Dust and debris washed over Venli in a furious wind. She pressed against the stone wall, clinging to one of the balcony's supports. Terrible heat washed across her from the distant hole. Clamping her eyes shut, she tightened her grip. He could come claim her, but she would not let go. And what of the grand purpose? What of the power he offers? Did she still want those things? Or was that merely something to grasp onto now that she had brought about the end of her people? She gritted her teeth. In the distance, she heard a quiet rhythm. Somehow it sounded over the roar of the wind, the clacking of dust and stones, the rhythm of anxiety. She opened her eyes and saw Timber fighting against the wind in an attempt to reach her. Bursts of light exploded from the little spren in frantic rings. Buildings crumbled along the street. The entire city was collapsing away. Even the palace broke apart, all save this one patch near the balcony. The little spren changed to the rhythm of the lost and began to slide backward. Venli shouted and released the pillar. She immediately was pushed with the wind, But although she wasn't in storm form any longer, this was a form of power. Incredibly nimble. She controlled her fall, going down on her side and skidding on the stones, feet toward the oppressive light. As she neared the little spren, Venli jammed her foot into a cleft in the street, then grabbed a crack in a broken stone, pulling herself to a halt. With her other hand, she twisted and snatched timber from the air. Touching timber felt like touching silk, being blown by a wind. As Venli folded her left hand around the spren, she felt a pulsing warmth. Timber pulsed to praise as Venli pulled her close to her breast. Great, Venli thought, lowering her head against the wind, her face against the ground, holding on to the cleft in the rock with her right hand. Now we can fall together. She had one hope. To hold on and hope that eventually... The heat faded. The wind stilled. Debris came clattering back to the ground, though the fall was less clamorous this time. Not only had the wind been pulling sideways rather than up, there simply wasn't much debris left. Venli rose, covered in dust, her face and hands cut by chips of stone. Timber pulsed softly in her hand. The city was basically gone. No more than the occasional outline of a building foundation, and the remains of the strange rock formations known as the wind blades. Even those had been weathered down to knobs 5 or 6 feet tall. The only structure in the city that remained was a quarter of the tower where Colin had been standing. Behind her was a black, gaping hole into nothingness. The ground trembled. Oh, no! Something beat against the stones underneath her. The very ground began to shake and crumble. Venli ran toward the broken palace right as everything at last fell apart. The ground, the remaining foundations, even the air seemed to disintegrate. A chasm opened beneath her, and Venli leaped, trying to reach the other side. She came up a few feet short and plummeted into the hole. Falling, she twisted in the air, reaching for the collapsing sky with one hand and clutching timber in the other. Above, the man in the blue uniform leaped into the chasm. He fell beside the hole's perimeter and stretched one hand toward Venli, his other ground against the rock wall, hand scraping the stone. Something flashed around his arm, lines of light, a framework that covered his body. His fingers didn't bleed as they scraped the stone. Around her, the rocks, the air itself became more substantial. In defiance of the heat below, Venli slowed just enough that her fingers met those of Colin. Go! She crashed to the floor of her cave back in Marat. The vision gone. Sweating, panting, she opened her left fist. To her relief, timber floated out, pulsing with a hesitant rhythm.
Dalinar dissolved into pure pain. He felt himself being ripped apart, flayed, shredded. Each piece of him removed and allowed to hurt in isolation, a punishment, a retribution, a personalized torment. It could have persisted for an eternity. Instead, blessedly, the agony faded, and he came to himself. He knelt on an endless plain of glowing white stone. Light coalesced beside him, forming into a figure dressed in gold and white, holding a short scepter.
"What were you seeing?" Odium asked, curious.
He tapped his scepter on the ground like a cane. Noadan's palace, where Dalinar had been moments before, materialized out of light beside them.
"Ah, this one again. Looking for answers from the dead?"
Dalinar squeezed his eyes shut. What a fool he had been. If there had ever been a hope of peace, he'd probably destroyed it by pulling that Parshendi woman into a vision and subjecting her to Odium's horrors.
Dalinar, Dalinar, Odium said. He settled down on a seat formed from light, then rested one hand on Dalinar's shoulder.
It hurts, doesn't it? Yes, I know pain. I am the only god who does.
The only one who cares. Can there be peace?
Dalinar asked, his voice ragged. Speaking was hard. He'd felt himself being ripped apart in the light moments before.
Yes, Dalinar, Odium said. There can be. There will be.
After you destroy Roshar.
After you destroy it, Dalinar. I am the one who will rebuild it.
Agree to a contest between champions, Dalinar forced out. Let us find a way to...
He trailed off. How could he fight this thing? Odium patted Dalinar's shoulder.
Be strong, Dalinar. I have faith in you even when you don't have it in yourself. Though it will hurt for a time, there is an end. Peace is in your future. Push through the agony. Then you will be victorious, my son.
The vision faded, and Dalinar found himself back in the upper room of Urethiru. He collapsed into the seat he'd placed there, Navani taking his arm, concerned. Through his bond, Dalinar sensed weeping. The Stormfather had kept Odium back, but storms he had paid a price. The most powerful Spren on Roshar, embodiment of the tempest that shaped all life, was crying like a child, whispering that Odium was too strong.
110. A Million Stars. The Midnight Mother created monsters of shadow and oil, dark imitations of creatures she saw or consumed. Their description matches no Spren I can find in modern literature. From Hesse's Mythica, page 252. Captain Notam gave the command, and two of the sailors unlatched a section of the hull, exposing the crashing waves of beads just beyond. Shallan put her free hand on the frame of the open cargo door and leaned out over the churning depths. Adolin tried to tug her back, but she remained in place. She'd chosen to wear Vale's outfit today, in part for the pockets. She carried three larger gemstones. Kaladin carried four others. Their bromes had all run out of Stormlight. Even these larger unset gems were getting close to failing. Hopefully they would last long enough to get them to Thalen City and the Oathgate. Beyond the waves, so close that the sailors feared hidden rocks beneath the beads, a dark landscape interrupted the horizon. The inverse of Longbrow's Straits, a place where trees grew tall, forming a black jungle of glass plants. A sailor clomped down the steps into the hold and barked something at Captain Notam. "Your enemies are close now," the captain translated. Honor's Path had made a heroic effort these last few hours, pushing its mandras to exhaustion, and it hadn't been nearly enough. The fused were slower than Kaladin could go, but they were still far faster than the ship. Shallan looked at the captain. His bearded face, which glowed with a soft phantom light, betrayed nothing of what must have been a powerful conflict for him. Turn over the captives to the enemy and perhaps save his crew? Or set them free and hope the ancient daughter could escape? A door at the back of the hold opened, and Kaladin led Syl from her cabin. The captain had only now given permission to release her, as if wishing to delay the decision until the last possible moment. Syl's color seemed muted, and she clung to Kaladin's arm, unsteady. Was she going to be able to make it to shore with them? She's a Spren. She doesn't need air. She'll be fine. Hopefully.
Go then, the captain said, and be swift.
I cannot promise that my crew, once captured, will be able to keep this secret for long. Apparently it was difficult to kill Spren, but hurting them was quite easy. Another sailor released Adolin's sword Spren from her cabin. She didn't look as weathered as Syl. One place seemed as good as another to her. Kaladin led Syl over. "Ancient daughter," the captain said, bowing his head.
"Won't meet my eyes, Notam?" Syl said. "I suppose locking me away here isn't too different from all those days you spent running about at father's whims back home."
He didn't reply, but instead turned away. With Syl and the Deadeye joining them, that only left one person. Azure lounged by the steps, wearing her breastplate and cloak, arms folded.
"You sure you won't change your mind?" Shallan asked.
Azure shook her head.
"Azure," Kaladin said, "I was too harsh earlier. That doesn't mean I..."
"It's not that," she said.
"I simply have a different thread to chase. And besides, I left my men to fight these monsters in Kulinar. Doesn't feel right to do the same again."
She smiled.
"Don't fear for me, Stormblessed. You will have a much better chance if I stay here, as will these sailors. When you boys next meet the swordsman who taught you that morning kata, warn him that I'm looking for him."
"Zael?" Adolin said.
"You know Zael?"
"We're old friends," she said.
"Notam, have your sailors been cutting those bales of cloth into the shapes I requested?"
"Yes," the captain said. "But I don't understand."
"You soon will."
She gave Kaladin a lazy salute. He returned it, sharper. Then she nodded to them and walked up toward the main deck. The ship crashed through a large wave of beads, sending some through the open cargo deck doors. Sailors with brooms started brushing them back toward the opening.
"Are you going?" the captain said to Shallan. "Every moment you delay increases the danger to us all."
He still wouldn't look at Syl. "Right," Shallan thought. "Well, someone had to start the party." She took Adolin by one hand and Pattern by the other. Kaladin linked hands with Pattern and Syl, and Adolin grabbed his Spren. They crowded into the opening into the cargo hold, looking at the glass beads below, churning, catching the light of a distant sun, sparkling like a million stars.
"All right," she said. "Jump!"
Shallan threw herself off the ship, joined by the others. She crashed into the beads, which swallowed her. They seemed to slip too easily into them. Like before, when she'd fallen into this ocean, it felt like something was pulling her down. She sank into the beads, which rolled against her skin, overwhelming her senses with thoughts of trees and rocks. She fought the sensations, struggling to keep herself from thrashing too much. She clung to Adolin, but Pattern's hand was pulled from her grip.
"I can't do this. I can't let them claim me. I can't..."
They hit the bottom, which was shallow here near the shore. Then Shallan finally let herself draw in Stormlight, one precious gemstone's worth. It sustained her, calmed her. She fished in her pocket for the bead she'd picked from the bucket earlier. When she fed the bead Stormlight, the other beads around her trembled, then pulled back, forming the walls and ceiling of a small room. The Stormlight curling from her skin illuminated the space with a faint glow. Adolin let go of her hand and fell to his knees, coughing and gasping. His Deadeye just stood there as always.
"Damnation," Adolin said, wheezing. "Drowning with no water. It shouldn't be so hard, should it? All we had to do was hold our breath."
Shallan stepped to the side of the room, listening.
Yes, it was almost like she could hear the beads whispering to her beneath their clattering.
She plunged her hand through the wall, and her fingers brushed cloth. She grabbed hold, and a moment later, Kaladin seized her arm and pulled himself into the room made from beads, stumbling and falling to his knees. He wasn't glowing.
"You didn't use a gemstone?" Shallan asked.
"Almost had to," he said.
He took a few deep breaths, then stood up.
But we need to conserve those.
He turned around.
Syl?
A disturbance at the other side of the chamber announced someone approaching. Whoever it was wasn't able to get in until Shallan walked over and broke the surface of the bead wall with her hand. Pattern entered and looked around the room, humming happily.
A nice pattern, Shallan.
Syl, Kaladin repeated. We jumped hand in hand, but she let go. Where?
She'll be fine, Shallan said.
Pattern agreed. Spren need no air.
Kaladin took a deep breath, then nodded. He started pacing anyway, so Shallan settled down on the ground to wait, pack in her lap. They each carried a change of clothing, 3 water jugs, and some of the food Adolin had purchased. Hopefully it would be enough to reach Thalen City. Then she'd have to make the Oathgate work. They waited as long as they dared, hoping the fuse had passed them by, chasing the ship. Finally, Shallan stood up and pointed.
That way.
You sure? Kaladin asked.
Yes, even the slope agrees.
She kicked at the obsidian ground, which ran at a gentle incline.
Right, Adolin said. Lock hands.
They did so, and, heart fluttering, Shallan recovered the stormlight from her shell of a room. Beads came crashing down, enveloping her. They started up the slope, against the tide of beads. It was more difficult than she'd imagined. The current of the shifting beads seemed determined to hold them back. Still, she had stormlight to sustain her. They soon reached a place where the ground was too steep to walk on easily. Shallan let go of the men's hands and scrambled up the incline. A moment after her head broke the surface, Syl appeared on the bank, reaching down and helping Shallan up the last few feet. Beads rolled off her clothing, clattering against the ground, as the others pulled themselves onto the shore.
I saw the enemy fly past, Syl said. I was hiding by the trees here.
At her urging, they entered the forest of glass plants before settling down to recover from their escape. Shallan immediately felt herself itching for her sketch pad. These trees! The trunks were translucent. The leaves looked like they were blown from glass in a multitude of colors. Moss drooped from one branch like melted green glass, strands hanging down in silky lines. When she touched them, they broke off. Overhead, the clouds rippled with the mother-of-pearl iridescence that marked another high storm in the real world. Shallan could barely see it through the canopy, but the effect on Pattern and Syl was immediate. They stood up straighter, and Syl's wan color brightened to a healthy blue-white. Pattern's head shifted more quickly, spinning through a dozen different cycles in a matter of minutes. Stormlight still trailed from Shallan's skin. She'd taken in a rather large amount of it, but hadn't lost too much. She returned it to the gemstone, a process she didn't quite understand, but which felt natural at the same time. Nearby, Syl looked to the southwest with a kind of wistful, far-off expression.
Syl?
Shallan asked.
There's a storm that way, too, she whispered,
then shook herself and seemed embarrassed. Kaladin dug out 2 gemstones.
All right, he said. We fly.
They decided to use 2 gemstones worth of stormlight to fly inward, a gamble to get a head start on their hike and to get away from the coast. Hopefully the fused wouldn't treat the honor spren too harshly. Shallan worried for them, but equally for what would happen if the fused doubled back to search for her group. A short flight now should deposit them far enough inland that they'd be tough to locate. Once they landed, they would hike across several days' worth of Shadesmar landscape before reaching the island of Thalena, which would manifest as a lake here. Thalen City and its Oathgate were on the very rim of that lake. Kaladin lashed them one at a time, and fortunately his arts worked on the spren as they did humans. They took to the air and started the last leg of their journey.
111. Aayla Steely.
It will not take a careful reader to ascertain I have listed only 8 of the unmade here. Lore is confident there were 9, an unholy number, asymmetrical and often associated with the enemy. From Hesse's Mythica, page 266. Dalinar stepped out of the Oathgate control building into Thalen City and was met by the man he most wanted to punch in all Roshar. Meridas Amaram stood straight in his House Satius uniform, clean-shaven, narrow-faced, square-jawed. Tall, orderly, with shining buttons and a sharp posture, he was the very image of a perfect Alethi officer. "Report," Dalinar said, hopefully keeping the dislike out of his voice. Amaram Satius fell into step with Dalinar, and they walked to the edge of the Oathgate platform overlooking the city. Dalinar's guards gave them space to converse.
"Our crews have done wonders for this city, Bright Lord," Amaram said. "We focused our initial attentions on the debris outside the walls. I worried that would give an invading force too much cover, not to mention rubble to construct a ramp up to the wall."
Indeed, the plain before the city walls, which had once housed the markets and warehouses of the docks, was completely clear. A killing field, interrupted by the occasional outline of a broken foundation. The Almighty only knew how the Thalen military had allowed a collection of buildings outside the walls in the first place. That would have been a nightmare to defend.
"We shored up positions where the wall was weakened," Amaram continued, gesturing. "It's not high by Kolinar standards, but it is an impressive fortification nonetheless. We cleared out the buildings right inside to provide staging and resource dumps, and my army is camped there. We then helped with general reconstruction."
"The city looks far better," Dalinar said. "Your men did well."
"Then maybe our penance can be over," Amaram said.
He said it straight, though anger spread, a pool of boiling blood spread from beneath his right foot.
"Your work here was important, soldier. You didn't only rebuild a city, you built the trust of the Thalen people."
"Of course,"
Amaram added, more softly.
"And I do see the tactical importance of knowing the enemy fortifications."
"You fool.
The Thalens are not our enemies."
"I misspoke," Amaram said. "Yet I cannot ignore that the Kolin troops have been deployed to the border between our kingdom and Yakaved. Your men got to liberate our homeland while mine spend their days digging in rocks. You do realize the effect this has on their morale, particularly since many of them still assume you assassinated their high prince."
"I hope that their current leader has worked to disabuse them of such false notions."
Amaram finally turned to look Dalinar in the eyes. Those anger spren were still there, though his tone was crisp and militaristic.
"Bright Lord, I know you for a realist. I've modeled my career after yours. Frankly, even if you did kill him, which I know you must deny, I would respect you for it. Toril was a liability to this nation. Let me prove to you that I am not the same. Storms, Dalinar. I'm your best frontline general, and you know it. Toril spent years wasting me because my reputation intimidated him. Don't make the same mistake. Use me. Let me fight for Alethkar, not kiss the feet of Thalen merchants. I..."
"Enough," Dalinar snapped. "Follow your orders. That is how you'll prove yourself to me."
Amaram stepped back, then, after a deliberate pause, saluted. He spun on his heel and marched down into the city.
"That man," Dalinar thought.
Dalinar had intended to tell him that this island would host the front lines in the war, but the conversation had slipped from him. Well, Amaram might quickly get the fighting he wanted, a fact he would discover soon enough at the planning meeting. Boots on stone sounded behind him as a group of men in blue uniforms joined him at the rim of the plateau.